A vote in the Indiana House on the governor's tax cut is blocked. What's it mean? New efforts to restrict abortion, Glenda Ritz in a power struggle, and longer sentences for violent criminals. That, plus the effects of the sequester in Indiana, frisbee-throwing robots, and more. On Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 22, 2013.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, Democrats in the Indiana House tried to force a vote on Governor Mike Pence's proposed tax cut. The Democrats first offered an alternative budget that included a smaller tax cut, and the Republicans voted it down on a 31-65 party line vote. Then, the Democrats called for an up or down vote on an amendment identical to the governor's plan. The Republicans blocked it with a procedural maneuver. Here's how it played out with Representative Terry Gooden at the mic.
Governor Pence has notified the newspaper several times, you folks have read this, that he was disappointed in the fact that this tax cut was not in the House version of the budget bill. I'm one person that does not like to see the governor to be disappointed.
Representative Gooden, a point of order has been raised.
But there is support for tax cuts on both sides.
Why won't the Republicans vote on the Pence tax cut? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm WishTV State House reporter Jim Shella. Dan Parker, are both sides playing politics at this point?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that there was a pursuit of an honest debate on the governor's tax cut proposal on the floor of the House. An amendment was offered, procedurally blocked. I mean, the question is, why won't the Republicans, you know, want to vote on it?
This is not an attempt to embarrass the governor or some of the Republicans?
No, not at all. It was an honest debate.
You buy that?
He did that with a straight face. I do not want to play poker with you, pal.
Let me see which fingers are crossed.
Yeah, very well.
Hands where we can see them.
Oh, come on. I mean, that's what this was all about, to try to embarrass people. But
who are they trying to embarrass?
Well,
Republicans in the House or the governor?
Both. I mean, both. I mean, clearly that's what they're trying to do. Everybody in the room knew it. And it's one of those deals where we've said on this show over and over and over again that they're not going to know how much money they have to spend until the April forecast comes out. And that's what's going on here. The Pence tax cut is still on the table. And we'll know in mid-April whether or not they have the money to do all the stuff that needs to be done,
okay,
including more
say,
money for education.
You could say, we don't know what we're going to have, so we'll put the tax cut in there now with the chance that it'll come
out. Why would you do that? Why would you do that now if you know you can't do it later? If you can't do it later, then you got to undo it. It's crazy. You got to wait until you know whether you have the money. That's what they were doing here. And so this was just designed.
Why couldn't they have
just
an honest debate about it?
This was just designed. Well, they did have an honest debate about
it.
People went to the microphone and talked about it. People have been talking about it in committee for weeks. Where you been? I go to these meetings. I never see you at these meetings.
you get paid to be over there.
Well, okay. Well, that's right.
Did the Democrats, John, accomplish anything?
I'm not so sure in the end either side. This, you know, is bruised or battered as a result of this. I mean, there was some interesting political theater, and I do think there was a good deal of theater here on both sides. Clearly, Republicans don't want to be seen in the House Republican caucus voting against a measure that the governor ran on that was a linchpin of his campaign. Even if, just for appearance's sake, you know, who wants to appear to be at odds with the titular head of the party. So And Democrats, you know, hey, they're in a position to, what's the opposite of a supermajority, a superminority? They're in a superminority. They've got to do something to keep things fun and interesting and get the occasional spotlight. And so I don't fault either side. I mean, it's just part of the theater.
The headlines on internet stories and newspaper stories favor the Democrats.
I think so, because even though the attempt failed, the attempt was made. And, you know, it's interesting to note that the Democrats are on the same side as Governor Pence on this issue. And, you know, good for them, because that's the advantage that they can get. That's what they have to do. I mean, when you've got the super minority like they have, then you need to do whatever you can to remain relevant in the process. And I think they achieved that this week.
Of course, the danger.
Tell me this. If we get to the end game and there's a tax cut there, do you think most of the Democrats will vote for it?
No.
There won't be a tax cut there in the end game.
But that's not the question. Do you think that they'll vote for it if there is one?
Of course, I mean, that would be
the answer is no.
That would be,
you know,
he's a mind reader.
You know why? Because if there is one at the end of the day, that means there's going to be less money spent on education, less money spent on other jobs and other places.
The forecast comes out where you think it's going to be.
Well, if it does, then we're all for it. But you know as well as I do,
there won't be as much. At the end of the day, there's going to be some House Republicans
spent,
that regret
there
this
won't
procedural
be as
vote.
Much spent on education. There won't be as much spent and on jobs. And the Democrats won't vote
I
for
think
it. That's what's phony.
That's right. Well, that's the grand irony here. The old saying, be careful what you wish for. Because I think Mike is right. I don't think that the majority of the minority caucus, if we want to put it that way, the vast majority of Democrats, I'm sure, push come to shove, would not support a 10% tax cut. It just wouldn't happen.
Moving on. A legislative committee this week endorsed a proposal to require Indiana clinics that provide abortion drugs to face the same requirements as clinics that perform surgical abortions. The State Senate Health Committee voted 7-5 to advance the bill to the full Senate. Bill supporters say abortion pills sometimes cause complications that the prescribing clinic must be prepared to deal with, while abortion rights groups argue that extra requirements are aimed at creating more obstacles to women seeking the drug. Mike McDaniel, are the anti-abortion forces going out of their way to create controversy?
I don't think so. And the reason I say that is I think Travis Holdman is one of the most honorable and credible guys that I know.
State Senator, author of this bill, of
all the members of the General Assembly, he feels very strongly about the fact that there are no rules regarding drug-induced abortion in Indiana. And he thinks that patient safety is at play here. And there was conflicting testimony in committee to that effect. But I think he believes it very strongly, and that's why he did it.
All right, there's another bill that came through that committee that requires a woman seeking an abortion to listen to the heartbeat of the fetus, and that's clearly aimed at being a new restriction on abortion. What do you think is at work here?
Well, clearly, the most conservative wing of the Republican Party is driving this agenda. It has really no place in a session that's supposed to be about jobs and moving Indiana forward. Why? Why do we don't need this. We don't need to be debating this. We need to be talking about jobs and education and moving Indiana forward. And, you know, these proposals treat women like they're stupid. I mean, these are decisions that women should make in consultation with their doctors. The state has no business being a part of it.
Did you, John, have any doubt that the supermajority would pursue this sort of legislation?
No, I didn't have any doubt that they would. And it's not a surprise, however, that it wasn't until the very end of the process that in the first House that this occurred. It'll be interesting to see where it goes, if it goes anywhere from committee into second reading and on to the second House, because I think that the leadership of both sides, as Dan points out, is very sensitive to the notion that they're all about business of jobs and the economy. And I think that they might see this as a distraction in that. And I think that they would probably, I'd be surprised if it moves.
Well, if it does move, during the campaign, Mike Pence at one point said that if an abortion bill comes to my desk, I'll sign it. So there's little doubt that this will become law if the supermajority decides that it should.
Oh, I think that's probably true. And then, of course, it would probably end up in court, as it has in other states. And that's one thing we should remember here. It's not as if, and I'm not trying to impugn anybody's integrity. People feel strongly about this issue, but it's not as if somebody woke up one day and said, I'm worried about the lack of regulation of this particular medication. I need to go out and find a solution. These are boilerplate bills that Right to Life groups have put out across the country. And as is the case with so many pieces of legislation anymore on so many issues, it's a national cookie cutter. You know, we're going to roll it out in 50 states, and it's on any number of issues. So it's not as if this is just mm-hmm. one person's idea to crack down on medication. And in fact, in several states right now, it is tied up in court, that the very bill that we're talking about here. But I think John's right. Leadership, they don't want this. And it's the same thing we've seen gun measures, for instance. Look at all of the gun measures that have been proposed by high-profile Republicans. Guess what? They're all virtually all, either in Senate Rules Committee or in House Rules Committee. Yeah. Guess why? Nobody wants to weigh in on issues like that or that are seen as wedge issues or divisive mm-hmm. issues when, in fact, it's clear that Hoosiers want to deal with economic policy.
There's a power struggle underway at the State House, and State School Superintendent Glenda Ritz is in the middle of it. GOP supermajorities in the General Assembly have the ability to take away at least some of her power, and that's just what some Republicans are trying to do. Ritz, a Democrat, says she's working to build relationships with the Republicans, including Governor Mike Pence, but the House Education Committee voted this week to take away her management of the school voucher system. It also voted to eliminate the payroll deduction of union dues from the members of the teachers' union that helped elect her. Ritz says the election was over in November.
Political games, you know, that might be done just to simply take away power is really not what I'm interested in. All the previous predecessors prior to me have worked under the same rules regarding the governance structure, and I would hope that I'd be afforded the same.
So the bill that takes the voucher system away from her is still on the calendar. The House Speaker says that he has her assurance that she'll manage the system fairly, so it's probably not going anywhere. Was this a power play, John? What exactly was going on?
Well, I think this is a very conscious effort to limit as much as they can the power, and they have that opportunity. I think that Republicans have to be careful, however, in looking as if they are trying to strip power from Glenda Ritz, and if they are going to do it, they better have a pretty good rationale, and I'm not sure that they measured up on this particular bill. So, you know, I'll be curious to see whether the Speaker allows that bill to move or does reassign it and essentially kill it. But it's a touchy issue.
She ran against vouchers, but says that now that she's in office, she will manage the system properly. The bill would have put the management under the Office of Management and Budget. I mean, is there justification for what the Republicans at least started to do here?
Well, what it stemmed from, of course, some of the schools that have become increasingly reliant on vouchers said, hey, the filing period last year was in February, and we've heard nothing from the Department of Education yet. Now, subsequent to those complaints and subsequent to the introduction of this the particular proposal, the Department of Education and Glenda Ritz have said March 1st is going to be when that's opening. So, I mean, it does take the wind out of the sails, you might say, of some of the critics. But it's hard to John's point, it's hard to go in after an election and sort of redistribute power when the voters of the state of Indiana have seen fit to give her, in this case, those powers when she ran for office.
So on the other side of the building, in the Senate Education Committee, Dennis Cruz, the chairman, has gone on record as saying that he thinks she should keep her powers unless there's some reason demonstrated to take them away. Is this just a show of force with no intention of carrying
it out? No, I actually think that's a situation where you have to understand that when they put this program in place, what is it, 2 years old?
Yeah.
When they put this program in place, they used a lot of political capital to get this done. And they don't think that this program has really begun to take off yet, although it seems to be growing at a pretty rapid pace. And so they want to make sure it gets a chance to do what they wanted it to do. And if somebody campaigned against you for better part of a year that you're going to dismantle this, I can see why they'd want to make sure that after us expending the political power that we did to get it done, that you don't want somebody to try to dismantle it just on how they operate the program. Now, she says she's not going to do that, so they backed away. So that's a good thing. But, you know, I think it's smart to give these programs a chance to do what they're supposed to do. and it's growing, and it's going to be very, very popular for a lot of years to come.
She's on the defensive.
Well, I mean, to answer some of your questions, this was a power grab. It wasn't a struggle; it was a grab. I think that the speaker deserves some credit for, lines of communication with Glenda Ritz. She ran on a platform to sort of take politics out of education. I think some of the legislators need to listen to that, and to stress John's point that there was an educational community helped elect Glenda Ritz, and I think some of the legislators need to be careful not to go too far with her. She swore an oath to uphold the laws. This is a law that she swore to uphold. Whether you like a law or not, Michael, you have to implement it.
But so did Obama, and he's not doing it. So
please,
what difference
come on.
Does it make?
And keep in mind, though, she dodged a bullet on this issue. It's not a ceasefire or a fire-free zone yet, because
that's right.
There were two other measures that got attention this week, also came out of the same committee. One would lessen the ability of the union to collect dues from, or at least have districts in a position to collect dues. That would be off the table in the future, and also would force her to share more of her power with, for instance, the Education Roundtable and the State Board of Education on education benchmarks, the so-called A through F grading system. So it's not as if she can declare a complete victory this week. There's still people gunning for her and the authority of her office.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, does Glenda Ritz have too much power? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, she should be given more authority. Last week's question was, do you support tax breaks for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway? 55% said yes, it's an important institution. 20% said no, it's a private operation. 25% said, I trust lawmakers to do the right thing. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR. And look for the poll. The Indiana House of Representatives is considering a bill this week that would lead to longer sentences for violent criminals. The bill would require murderers and other violent felons to serve 85% of their sentences. Many of them now serve only 50%. It's part of a comprehensive effort to rewrite sentencing guidelines that would also reduce sentences for some lesser crimes and therefore eliminate prison overcrowding. The emphasis, however, is on keeping sociopaths locked up.
We've also reduced the credit time you can earn for getting a college degree from 4 years to two. The goal is certainty in sentencing.
The worst of the worst, the people at the top, they're going to serve more time. We've enhanced those penalties.
Representative Matt Pierce there, preceded by Representative Greg Steuerwald, John Schwanes. Why hasn't this been done sooner?
Well, it's not for lack of effort. I mean, the last time the state completely overhauled the criminal code and sentencing requirements was 1977. So there has been a push. Mitch Daniels, back in 2009, created a task force to look at the issue. There was, I think it's virtually identical legislation, similar legislation that was put forth with the backing of the governor and some high-profile lawmakers in 2010. But at that time, a lot of people were nervous. They didn't want to be seen as soft on crime. You know, let's lock them up and throw away the key mentality. So this is a good case study, actually, I think, in the right way to garner support. So they went back and made sure that the prosecuting attorney's counsel was on board, made sure that the state's judges represented public defenders. That was the third leg of the stool there. All of the key constituencies, judges, public defenders, and prosecutors were on board. This now, that gives everybody cover. It's not a soft on crime versus, get okay. tough. It's no longer that kind of issue.
And current projections say that the state will need a new prison by 2019, and this could push that back by 4 or 5 years. That's pretty good motivation.
It's excellent motivation. And aside from the good public policy in that regard, it's good public policy from a fiscal angle. We can't continue to build prisons. It's irresponsible on many levels. It's on the cost of the human beings. This strikes me as being a very reasonable approach. You put away the people who need to be put away. You give a chance to the others to be rehabilitated and contribute to society again, and you save the state money at the same time. It's a win-win.
A lot more people on probation.
A lot more. I mean, this is a prime example of not just getting everybody around the table, but a bipartisan bill. I mean, you had people as divergent as Matt Pierce and Brent Steele. Working on the same bill and getting it done. It's a smart on crime bill, to take off on what we did in the 90s and early 2000s about being tough.
You see this going all the way through?
Oh, yes. I think John said it best from the standpoint that it's now we've given everybody enough cover that nobody looks like they're either too hard or too soft on crime on this one. We are going to have to continue to build prisons. But the longer you can delay the building of those prisons, the better off you're going to be. And this does that for a good long time.
Somebody's got to pay, though, for the probation and the expansion of the
community
corrections. Sure, it's still expensive. And that's the big question now. Will there be money attached to the mandate?
Well, in other states that this has been tried, it's been better for the nonviolent offenders that need a way to get their behavior changed to reenter society.
Nearly 1,000 Indiana National Guard members would face temporary furloughs if automatic federal spending cuts take effect next month. Unless Congress heads off the cuts set for March 1st, the Guard members would lose one day's work and pay each week for 22 weeks. That adds up to at least $7 million in wages. Indiana Air National Guard spokesman Master Sergeant Darren Hubble told the Lafayette Journal-Gazette that about 170 full-time personnel at the Air National Guard's base in Fort Wayne would be furloughed. That's more than half the fighter wing's full-time personnel. Dan Parker, will that influence Indiana members of Congress? And in fact, that's just a fraction of what the sequester effect would be in Indiana.
Well, you're talking about there could be air traffic control towers in Terre Haute and Fort Wayne shut down. A lot of grant money, taken away from the state. I don't think it is. We had a member, Republican member today, just say that he thinks that no one will notice. If the sequester kicks in.
Larry Bouchon you're referring to.
This is a meat cleaver way to do this. There's a smart, targeted way to do it, and they should actually stop their vacations and go back to work and get it done.
I mean, the folks putting together the state budget are worried about this.
Well, sure. You're always worried about where it's going to happen and what it's going to mean to your state. But the fact of the matter is, this whole sequester idea was originally proposed by the Obama administration. Including the $500 billion cut to the defense budget, and now he's out running against the very thing that he proposed.
He's blaming the Republicans, and he seems to be winning the blame game.
Let me tell you something.
Hey, the PowerPoint from Speaker Boehner today kind of threw cold water on your argument.
That pegs the phony meter. He's the one who proposed it, now he's out running against it.
Come on, Michael.
It's unbelievable. It's dishonest. He really is.
The general public doesn't understand what this means.
Of course they don't.
No. Well, I mean, you're right. This is sort of takes us back to the first topic where things aren't necessarily quite what they seem when we're talking about the governor's tax cut. The president proposed this and advocated this initially, and Congress went along because it was seen as so onerous, such a horrible thing that nobody would ever go for it. Now, of course, attitudes have changed. Maybe we've gotten closer, and people say, it's not so onerous after all. So it'll be interesting. I think there's a concern, of course, that if the cuts are made and it's not perceived to be as painful as some would suggest, well, then will that up the clamor for these kinds of cuts on a permanent basis? And that, I mean, there's significant impact on states around the country.
I talked to Tim Brown, who's writing the House budget today, and he won't take sides on what's going on in Washington, but he says what he'd like is predictability.
Sure. Yep, that's exactly right.
Doesn't seem likely.
Well, and that's the biggest problem. I mean, if we look at the anemic rate of growth in the economy right now, and actually it's probably slowing to the point where it might be slipping back toward recession, a lot of the blame can be placed on the uncertainty caused by what's going on in Washington. The president, the Congress are all to blame for the fact that they keep kicking this can down the road. And as long as they do that, there's going to be uncertainty in the economy. Without economic growth, nothing else works.
All right, finally, have you ever seen a robot throw a Frisbee? That's the challenge about 100 high school kids have taken on as part of a worldwide robotics contest. Each of the four public high schools in Tippecanoe County has a team designing a Frisbee throwing robot. The contest is organized by FIRST, a nonprofit organization aiming to develop kids to be leaders in science and technology. The team's coaches say it helps the teens develop an engineering attitude.
This works. These kids spend 20 to 26 hours a week after school working on these robots, problem solving. The amount of problem solving that goes on is phenomenal.
That's Coach Doug Klumpy. Mike McDaniel, we've heard all this talk about the need for vocational training in the high schools, and the governor has a plan. This is an argument that there is some going on, right?
Absolutely. This is a great program, and I think this is the kind of thing that we ought to be doing in our high schools, but I think they'd pick something more useful, like if they could teach a robot to clean up after your dog versus throwing the frisbee for the dog to chase, I'd be all for that.
Well, that's maybe a good idea for next year. Maybe, how about robot politicians?
Oh, come on. That wouldn't be any fun.
Actually, I've known a couple. That's Indiana Weekly Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.